Hello and welcome to Macintosh and Maud Haven't Seen What? The podcast where Macintosh and Maud force each other to watch movies they should have already seen.
I'm David, a.k.a. Macintosh.
And I'm Diana, a.k.a. Maud. What are we watching this week?
Everybody, this is David.
And I'm Diana.
And this week, we watched Network.
Yay!
Is that how you really feel?
No. Aww. Not even a little bit.
Well, let's do the description and we'll get into it.
Okay.
A television network cynically exploits a deranged former anchor's ravings and revelations about the news media for its own profit.
So this is a recent film.
No.
What?
Same year as Taxi Driver, believe it or not.
Okay.
We went straight to another movie from the same time.
Which, you know, we've already established. I didn't watch any movies from the 70s.
The bigger question I had for you was, had you ever heard of this movie outside of me talking about it?
I don't think so.
Okay.
So I really didn't know what this was about.
Okay.
You didn't want me to look anything up, so I didn't.
Okay, so no context beforehand. Would it have helped to have context?
Maybe. It doesn't change the fact that I don't like it.
Well, then I'll give the context on when I first saw this.
Okay.
Because before we saw this, I considered this one of my favorite movies of all time.
That's so sad for me.
Pretty sure I watched this around high school.
Okay.
And that would have pegged it probably about, I don't know, 10 to 12 years ago when I first saw this movie. It wasn't the movie itself that I loved so much as how much I felt like it got correct. It predicted so many things and blew my mind that way.
That is fair. I understand why people would like this.
It doesn't hold up anymore, and I have some theories why.
Okay. I would also say that I know it won 3 performance Oscars.
Right.
I don't believe that any of those are warranted.
We'll talk about them when we get to the cast.
Okay.
We're going to walk through all the Oscars it did win. Yeah. And then we can debate about whether or not they should have won or not.
Okay.
Without the context of knowing who else was nominated.
Okay.
Except maybe for lead actor, which we can talk about because we know about Taxi Driver.
Yeah.
Why don't you like it?
It's poorly placed.
Poorly placed?
Paced. Sorry, I had dental surgery earlier this week. I am missing a front tooth, and it is making talking difficult.
Oh, and I have, you know, crazy cold voice, so I'm sure I'm all over the place on the microphone.
So I have some weird lisping stuff.
It's whatever. It is what it is.
Paced. It's poorly paced.
How so?
This whole movie's just a bunch of people standing around talking.
Yes.
Nothing's happening. Which, you had told me that this was Aaron Sorkin's favorite movie.
It's he considers this like a pinnacle of screenwriting.
That makes total sense.
Yes.
He is words. But one of the things that they did because of all of his words was the walk and talk.
Yeah.
This movie had no walk. It is all talk.
Yes.
It's bad.
Well, okay, but remember, this is 1976, and when we talk, I will talk about the writer and the director.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very different style that these two guys employ.
No, that's fine.
Because both our writer and our director, as opposed to Taxi Driver, these two guys are very old Hollywood. Or not even old Hollywood, but a generation before.
Okay. Well, this sounded like they wanted to have really important dialogue.
And absolutely.
And that's great. That's a wonderful aim. It's a great goal to have. They ruined it by no action taking place. They literally just have, like, there's one scene in the beginning where it's 10 men standing in a room arguing, but nothing is happening. That is bad direction. Poor blocking. That's what that is, because nothing's going on in that room.
So that leads me to one of these things. I think this should be a play, not a movie. I think this would work.
This could be a great play.
This would work amazingly well on stage, because those static scenes would become drawn in for the audience. And the broad acting styles that we see from mm-hmm. some of the lead performances would work a whole lot better.
But here's the thing. If you're going to put it on stage, you have to add action.
There would be. But I think the thing is, when you have 10 guys in a room, mm-hmm. it's much easier to block a scene on stage with 10 guys in a room where you're not having to worry about how a camera looks at it. You can have that action happen with 10 people at a table discussing news stuff.
No, it's not. Because in a movie, you get to pick your camera angles. You get to shoot and reshoot. You can do one side, you can do this side, and the other side over and over again until you get the whole piece that you want. You don't get to do that in a play.
See, I don't know. I think it would
The direction
would work much
better. Is poor. It is bad.
Maybe.
Because it took the words on the page and then didn't do anything with it on the screen.
Well, and here would be the devil's advocate argument. I'm not disagreeing with you. Mm-hmm. But the flip side of it might be they are doing their best to make it look like what a real newsroom would look like. They're trying to be verite about it, which I think if they are, that still doesn't lead anything to it, because we're back and forth between realistic and broad.
I can buy the dialogue for that goal.
Yeah.
The filming and the lack of action, I do not buy.
It's a shame, because this is one of my favorite directors. It's hard for me to try to admit that.
That it's a turd? Okay.
Not that it's a turd.
Okay, it's not as bad as RoboCop.
I don't think it's a turd at all. But I don't think it holds up.
No.
So one, I think this works on stage. I don't think it works.
I agree that this could be great on stage. I agree. But again, direction.
Yeah. I'll buy that. I'll buy that more needs to be happening, especially in the interstitial scenes.
And it's just that more needs to be happening with the actors. I don't have a problem with the words, per se. Some of the scenes go on a little too long.
Okay.
But again, if there was more action, it may not feel that way.
Which I think is why the Howard Beale scenes work so well, because there is action. There's stuff going on.
He's doing a lot of work.
Yes.
And that's Peter Finch, right?
Yes.
Okay. He's doing a great job.
Right.
He reminds me a lot of Albert Finney.
Both British. I mean, Peter Finch, I think, was Australian. But
Albert Finney's not British.
Yes, he is.
Is he?
Well, of course he is.
Nuh-uh.
Oh, yeah.
I don't.
His big breakout role was Tom Jones. Yeah, Albert Finney's a total British dude.
I don't believe you.
Also, the original Hercule Poirot.
I do know he was, because I was looking up the Murder on the Orient Express.
Uh-huh.
Ooh. Hold on, I'm looking at.
Albert Finney came from the theater, where he was especially successful in the plays of William Shakespeare to the movies. Then he became a leader in the free cinema.
He was born in England.
Of course he was English.
I didn't know that.
He was in, like, the English New Wave kitchen sink
okay,
films.
Well, most of the things I've seen him in, he's playing an American. And he does a wonderful job with that accent, so I had no reason to believe that he wasn't.
Yeah, but he cut his teeth on, like, the gritty English realism films of the 60s.
Okay, well, he's also 81 years old, so he's been around for a while, and I didn't know that.
I know.
Okay, sorry.
Here's the other thing that doesn't hold up about this movie anymore for me.
Okay.
Its predictive power has finally expired.
Especially now.
Right.
Like, we have seen, like, the culmination of all of that exploited to a degree that this film did not predict.
Right. When I saw this, mm-hmm. Fox News, I think, had just finally mm-hmm. hit it big. Granted, you know, we still had the fourth network and things mm-hmm. like that. I mean, first I'll run through what this movie got. Mm-hmm. It predicted the fourth network.
Yep.
Fox. Mm-hmm. And UBS was the fourth network. It predicted the
sensationalization news.
Of the news, mm-hmm. of making the news into entertainment.
Yes.
And the 24-hour news cycle.
Mm-hmm.
It predicted the punditry.
Yep.
In that class. Mm-hmm. It predicts reality television, mm-hmm. which this is still, I think, the only reality television that had happened was Real Life on HBO.
Yes.
Otherwise,
this was just before Cops started.
Oh, this was 10 years before Cops started.
Okay.
Yeah, Fox didn't bring out Cops until the late 80s.
Okay.
But that was their big thing, was they talked about Cops basically does the same thing that the Mao Zedong out,
yes.
Just flips it to the Cops instead.
Okay.
It gets, it got all of those things right. And when I saw it, Fox News had finally reached this pinnacle to where we weren't even pretending anymore that
it was a news station.
That it was news, and that the news needed to be an objective thing.
Yep.
Now, to be fair, the news never really was an objective thing, but there was an assumption from everybody that we were going to pretend it was.
Well, there was also a behavior that the news was supposed to report mostly fact. Mostly fact. Not all fact, but mostly fact.
The facts, the editorialism came from what facts they chose to report.
Correct.
As opposed to how they reported it.
Yes. I think that's all fair.
And this, I don't know how Paddy Chayefsky, the screenwriter, figured this out, but he saw all of those trends coming and threw them into this movie. Or he just took this idea and took it to a logical end, as maybe some of these things got right. It also got sleazy talk shows. It got the Donahues and the Morton Downey Jr.'s and that type of stuff in there, too.
Yeah, and, you know, I remember that show Hard Copy and Access Hollywood.
All of that.
Inside Edition.
The problem is that not only has that gone further now, but I think the thing is, like, Howard Beale has taken political power. Yes. And Howard Beale didn't die out. I felt like these guys thought at the end of it, they were just going to, it was going to tank and end. It was like, no, it just kept growing.
Yes.
And that's where this movie didn't predict the end.
Yeah.
Was that it was going to keep growing, that the only way you were going to get real news anymore was for alternative sources to bring it to you.
Well, and in this movie, it's finished by somebody killing him on air. And we have not had that occur to let's say, the Alex Joneses of the world.
Well, it hasn't happened on a national level. It has happened at a local level, and that happened before this movie. Christine Chubbuck committed suicide live on air.
Yes. Well, and recently, a woman was shot on the news, and her boyfriend has now won the legislative seat in that area.
Yeah.
That just happened. Yay, go them.
I mean, lots of those things did happen. I think the biggest problem with it, and that's why it's hard to get as invested in it as I was at the time, is because I'm like, it's gone past this, and they didn't get that part right. And so you've still got that in the back of your mind. The one scene that works for me and is timeless no matter what is the boardroom scene with Ned Beatty when he's in Arthur Jensen's boardroom and talks about the corporations of the world or the new nations. That scene is still...
Awesome. I do remember watching that scene and being like, yeah, there's just different corporations. It's Disney, AT&T, Coke,
Apple.
The entire world, Apple, the entire world is owned by like 7 companies.
And that scene to me is still the best one in the movie.
That is accurate.
When he stares down Howard Beale and goes, "You have messed with the primal forces of nature, Mr. Beale."
Yeah, that's kind of awesome.
It's great.
That's good.
Okay. So those, I mean, that's where I have that tug to, yeah, this doesn't work anymore. It fell apart.
Well, it's aged out.
Yeah. It's finally lost.
So if I had watched this 10 years ago, I might have been more like, okay.
Whoa.
I might have been like, okay, I would still have the same direction problems, but I might have been like, this is creepily accurate. Now I'm just like, we're living this. This is appalling. Okay, if you guys have not figured out by now, we are very liberal. And
we're not going to inject the specific political leanings into it, but it's got to come up with this movie because it's important
It's relevant to this movie, so we don't like Fox News or Alex Jones or any of that stuff, and we are not pleased with the current administration in the White House. The end.
But on the flip side, I think you could be a conservative and still see things the same way thinking about the other side. Okay. Let's start with Patty Chayefsky.
The writing's good.
Okay.
It could have been a little punchier. I feel like a lot of the ramblings from Faye Dunaway's character, I'm sorry, there's a lot of boring people in this movie, so I didn't catch any of their names.
Really, you should, because it's your name.
Oh, yeah. Shit.
Diana Christensen.
Damn. That's my bad. I felt like a lot of her ramblings in between could have been a little punchier.
Right.
But that's just me. Writing was good. I really like all of William Holden's dialogue was good. He played Max.
Right. For me, it's very uneven. That you get all of... You get these scenes like the boardroom and Howard's monologues and certain scenes.
The conversations are good.
Yeah.
The monologues and the ramblings are not.
See, and I actually think the monologues are the best part. I think they're fantastic. And I think the dialogue at some points is amazing.
Okay, well, Howard Beale's monologues are good.
That's
everyone
what I mean.
Else's, no.
No, but Howard's
are good. They're not great.
He
I
makes
don't think
them,
they're great. He's doing a great job.
Well, he makes them great. They're not perfect monologues, but he makes them amazing by how he's putting them in on screen.
I think you're getting a little romantic about it.
I think he's great.
Wrong. Okay.
But I would agree, Faye's monologues aren't great. All those different things. See, I'm almost the opposite. I think the writing is the problem.
Interesting.
And so, some of this is knowing Sidney Lumet as a director. Debut feature film is 12 Angry Men.
Okay.
He's done Failsafe, Dog Day Afternoon. He has a track record of really good films. He also has The Wiz, so I'll admit, he's not a great director.
He did The Wiz?
Yeah.
That movie's shit.
Yeah. But he's got it.
And here's the thing. I think 12 Angry Men is shit, too.
Ooh.
I think it's a great script. But again, you got a bunch of people sitting around doing nothing.
Could we have an issue of this as a stage director who gotten behind a camera?
Like, yes.
Maybe that's the issue here?
Yes.
Or a TV guy. I think he was maybe a TV guy.
Doesn't matter. He doesn't know what to do with actors on a camera.
Huh. You could be right there.
Because it's a different thing. And I think this is probably when you're doing theater, you know this is it.
Yeah.
This is it. So everything has to happen in everybody's sight. So, you know, if these people are over here, okay, I need these people to go be making coffee in the background. I need these people to be rustling paper. This guy's going to go light a cigarette. You got to get that all in one shot. When you're doing a movie, it's different. And I bet you the fact that, oh, well, I'll get a shot of these guys and then a shot of these guys, he didn't know how to compose visually.
I'm starting to think back to his movies and thinking maybe that is an issue.
Because it's just a bunch of people sitting in a room doing nothing.
Yeah.
There's no action. Nothing interesting is happening. To be fair, though, in the smaller scenes in Diana's office, when it's just like three or four people, they felt like more was going on. Granted, a lot of them were sitting still, but those felt more dynamic from a talky action perspective.
Well, there's also some poetry and there's some poetry and overlap. I'm thinking of like the scene when, oh gosh, what is it? After he gives the speech about the Saudis buying up the station, and you've got Robert Duvall cross-talking about how he's going to go find him and hunt him, and Faye and Diana's talking behind him about how they have to keep him on, and there's this interweaving of the writing. I think you're right. I think it is the directing, which is weird, because all of these movies that I love of his, I'm thinking about them, I'm like, it's in spite of him. It might be in spite of him that they're
because
good.
Because the writing is good.
Yeah.
If here's the thing, if the writing was shit, was pure shit, this movie would there's no amount of good direction and good writing and good acting can save bad writing.
Wow. Okay. That's good. I mean, it's good to get the perspective on that, to shift around and be like, the movies that I like of his are in spite of his directing style. And then, you know, when we have moments where we don't need a lot of movement, it works really well.
Yeah.
I'll also say the things I love about William Holden are the lines he gives when we go meta, when he's talking about the script, like with his wife, when he's talking about how the script's going to end. Now comes this scene when I go to meet with the old girl with this new girlfriend. Oh, those are so perfect. Oh. When he goes meta outside of the whole script is explaining what's going to happen.
William Holden is great.
He's an amazing actor.
He's the best part of this movie.
Interesting. Well, we'll get to the acting there. Okay, so then I guess the only thing that we can jump on there is, compared to Taxi Driver, did this movie did Paddy Chayefsky earn his Oscar for this movie? Because he won it.
He won. Do we know who he was up against?
In 77, we did have the split of original and adapted screenplays. Honestly, the only movie of any real note it was up against was Rocky.
Okay.
By Stallone.
And Rocky won Best Picture.
Yes.
But this won Best Original Screenplay.
It won Best Original Screenplay. All the President's Men won Adapted Screenplay, which, of course, and we'll have to watch that movie at some point, but
okay, so
it's fantastic.
That sounds like the compromise that they made. Because that year, it was Rocky, or was that?
And Patty was livid that it didn't win Best Picture.
Well, that's a huge standard argument. Well, how can something that won Best Writing and Best Actors doesn't win Best Movie?
But here's the thing. If I'm judging between this, Taxi Driver, and Rocky...
Taxi Driver or Rocky?
It's Taxi Driver or Rocky. This is not the Best Picture. No.
I agree. It's better writing.
And putting myself in 1976, I will totally admit that now I'm not blown away. In 76, your mind would have exploded with what they put in this movie.
Yeah.
Nobody expected what they did. Because nobody knew what it feels like? What?
Up in the air.
You know what else this feels like? Mm-hmm. The Social Network.
Oh, yeah. Which Social Network...
And Aaron Sorkin.
Oh, well, there's...
But...
I'm a big Aaron Sorkin fan.
But the thing
fan.
Is for me, I go back and forth with Aaron Sorkin. Mm-hmm. Yes. But I think Aaron Sorkin always works best when somebody's there to better execute the lines he gives.
Oh, and he'll agree.
And that's why Fincher was so perfect for his writing, because he would be meticulous in how he was going to stage that scene to make that dialogue work well.
They're a perfect pairing. And that movie, I mean, it's...
And an odd pairing in some ways. Fincher's so much darker and meticulous and measured in how he makes his scenes work.
But I think that's why he's so perfect for Aaron Sorkin, because Aaron Sorkin's dialogue is perfect on the page. It requires no edits.
But it doesn't always work on screen or on stage.
That's why a director like Fincher is perfect, because it's equal forces.
Right.
And Social Network, I mean, it's a perfect snapshot of life in 2004.
Exactly, and this wasn't a perfect snapshot, but that was a perfect snapshot.
This was a crystal ball.
That stuff, and this was a crystal ball, but in many ways it feels similar. They were movies that perfectly described this moment and this feeling of what was going to come out of this moment.
You know, and I bet you Rocky won out, because at the end of the day, when you finish watching Rocky, you feel good.
Oh, it did. I mean... Watergate had happened. We were in the midst of an economic crisis. All this new stuff they're talking about in Network was real shit that was going on.
Rocky was the only movie. It's not a feel-good movie, but it's a personal triumph movie.
Oh, it's a feel-good movie, especially compared to everything else that had come out in the 70s.
Yes, yes. That was one of, you know, that's one that you can look at and go, that was the agreement. That was their compromise.
Yeah, and judging... I mean,
and I don't think that is entirely unfair.
But I think on the flip side, he definitely does earn it. The writing is
kind of
incredible.
Great. It's great. Perfect, no, but good. Great. He deserves his Oscar.
All right, so we'll go to Sidney Lumet. Who
trash.
You've already made your opinions there. See, I don't want to say he's trash, because he's made some brilliant films.
He's made good movies, but he's not what made them good.
Okay, here's my caveat then. Dog Day Afternoon is on our list.
Okay.
I want to see your opinion on that one, because that is an active movie. Okay. Shit, because it's by default it has to be. It's a bank robbery.
Who else is in that?
It honestly, the only person of real note is Al Pacino.
Okay, yeah. No.
And
I feel you.
Then, what's his face? The guy who plays Fredo's in it, too.
Okay.
But otherwise, it's kind of just a character actor cavalcade. It's mostly just Pacino.
Okay.
So that one I want to see how you feel about that, and then that'll cement it for me of, yeah, no, he's not really a very good director.
Okay.
Other than what I will give him credit for is, to a person, everybody on this film said he's the most professional and kind human being we've ever worked with.
Well,
props to not being an asshole.
I respect that.
Yeah. He got the movie done. He did what he needed to do. And I'm like, okay, I can't fault you for that. So.
Yeah, I think I did read the trivia and someone said that he came in on time and under budget.
That's what he does.
Like, that's what people hire you to do.
I know.
It's everything's always the opposite.
He is part of a generation before the Spielbergs and the Scorseses of the world.
Here's the thing. He's not an artist.
No, he's a craftsman.
He's a worker.
And that's fine.
But,
yeah.
You gotta get your shit done.
Okay. Okay. Now we get to the acting.
Okay.
So we'll go through, and I'll also talk about, there one person didn't get nominated, but we mentioned that this had nominations in all five acting categories.
Mm-hmm.
1-3. It also...
All five acting.
Oh, it had nominations in all four, I guess.
Four. It had five nominations in the four, because it had two supporting, right?
Oh, you might be right, yeah.
Hold on.
No, yeah, you're right. Five nominations and in each of the four categories.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's start with Peter Finch,
okay.
The winner for Best Actor.
I'll allow it.
You'll allow it.
I'll allow it. Okay, who was he up against? I need to know who he was up against.
He was up against De Niro.
No.
Giancarlo Giannini in Seven Beauties. Oh, William Holden was up for Best Actor. Okay. And then Sylvester Stallone in Rocky.
Okay, no to Stallone. So in this category, it was either William Holden or Peter Finch.
Or Robert De Niro. For Taxi Driver.
Thinking.
Here's the thing. William Holden wasn't going to win. His performance is great, but it's vanilla. He is just a straight
man. See,
he
was my favorite in the movie. So okay. Now, okay. So I compared to the work that Howard Beale's character, Peter Finch, sorry, had to do.
I
would pick Peter over
Bill Holden. Okay, now.
So now I have to decide.
Tale of two crazies.
Do I think Howard over Travis Bickle?
Two vigilantes of their times.
Yes, they're both different vigilantes.
Of course.
Huh. You know what?
What?
I'm going to give it to Peter Finch.
Okay.
Robert De Niro's great.
He is.
But there is a different degree that
Howard Beale speaks to everybody, and Pete and Bickle's.
There's something under the surface with him that's just a little bit more. It's not engaging, and they're very different movies. I think Taxi Driver's a better movie. I like that better.
Of course.
I don't remember how I rated that one, but I don't know. I have to.
I need
to keep a better list of our ratings.
Well, let's leave it this way. It's a 1A and 1B, right? Like, both of them gave...
Yeah.
Both of them gave nearly the performance of their careers.
You know,
but Peter Finch gets the slight edge.
So you know how we usually do our Oscars? You know, we pick our number one spot. Who do we think is going to win? And we award ourselves 2 points for that. And if we pick the number two and they get it, we award ourselves 1 point.
Yeah.
That's how it would be. Howard would be one, and Travis Bickle would be two.
Mm-hmm. Or flip it. Howard, your pick to win would have been Howard
Beale.
And your pick to want to win would be Travis
Bickle.
Want to
win, but probably won't is, yeah.
That's fair.
Okay.
I think the other thing about it is Howard Beale spoke to a broader amount of people than Travis Bickle did.
Yes.
I think less people probably saw Taxi Driver. Less people probably felt engaged enough to look
want
at that.
To see that.
Whereas So watching Howard Beale was a much more approachable thing for a vast
Well, and these actors were more established.
True. To be fair, the language was a big deal and a big barrier for some
actors. Yeah, they took the F word a lot.
William Holden almost didn't take the role over the language.
I know. I saw that.
So, the thing to note with Peter Finch as well, not that I'm glad we had the discussion before we talked about that. He was the first person to be posthumously awarded an Oscar. He died 3 months before the Oscars and just after making the movie. And I remember the thing about the Mad as Hell speech. It took 1.5 takes because in the middle he had to sit. He had to rest. He had heart problems throughout the whole making of that movie, and was a legendary boozer. I mean, he doesn't have a whole lot of big credits on his on his IMDb list because he was a stage
performer,
a stage and then a character actor.
That
but
shows.
This
his
was.
Performance.
But on the flip side, this is. I mean, he's giving a performance like a man with nothing else to lose. You can tell this is the last thing he's ever gonna make, and he just goes for it.
And. Not funny, but coincidentally, the next posthumous Oscar, Heath Ledger, Dark Knight, who that was his. Well, it wasn't technically his last film, but
I just the speeches he gives, the speech where he tells about sending the telegrams is amazing. That one, the ones on the actual show, I think are even better than when he's on the news and the Mad as Hell speech and stuff like that. William Holden. Who you've mentioned that you really enjoy in this movie.
I think he was my favorite in the movie.
Is it the nuance?
Yes.
The subtlety that he gives to it?
When he's not talking, he's still acting. And he's old school.
And let me say that. He's been that in every movie I've seen him in.
Yes.
Every movie I see him in, he's always doing that. It doesn't matter where they put him, you know, he could be in Sunset Boulevard where he's having to go opposite, like, a broad, broad caricature, and he's still stone-faced.
But here's the thing, he's one of those actors who's still acting when he's not talking.
Yeah.
And that ain't always the case.
And the scene with his wife and the scene with Diana where he walks away are crushing.
Wonderfully done.
Just see it all in his face.
Some of the best films. Best film.
Oh, I didn't
best
mention.
Scenes in the movie.
I also didn't mention at the time, I was like, he's 56 and he looks like he's 75.
Well, he died when he was 63.
He lived a life.
Yeah. I remember first hearing about him on the I Love Lucy show.
And he'd been around well before that.
Yeah.
All right. The next Oscar winner. Is Faye Dunaway as Diana Christensen.
I hate her.
I do too.
Now, I'm going to do that. You're not supposed to like Diana Christensen.
No, absolutely not.
So I'm going to say it's a credit to Faye Dunaway that she won an Oscar for a character that you hate. Because that is not typically the case for women.
Right.
I think Faye Dunaway cannot act.
Whoa. You got other evidence to support this assertion?
Have you seen the movie Mommy Dearest?
Have you ever seen Bonnie and Clyde?
No.
Okay.
Now, maybe I just don't like Faye Dunaway, but I don't like Faye Dunaway.
That's fine.
And I don't like her in this. I don't believe her.
I don't think it's her fault. I think if there's a glaring issue with the writing, it's her character.
True, because of her ramblings. Now, let's be clear. I love that they made a woman have those attributes, especially at this time. She is career-driven. She talks about how she, you know, she just wants to have sex and get back to work. Like, that's all she cares about. She doesn't want to be married. She doesn't want to have a family. She just cares about her job.
But she
I like that.
Okay, except that she is to the detriment of her character. She is, and
she has no redeeming quality.
They portray her as being self-destructive because of that. I think, ultimately, it's an incredibly sexist portrayal of that. Now, granted, it's 1976, so yeah, I get that it's empowering, but I feel like these older white guys got it wrong because they didn't think about the fact that you're saying that she's going to destroy herself because of this when she could just be empowered.
She could be empowered. And here's the thing. There is nothing sexy about that woman.
No.
And that is what they missed, because they should have made her, to make it that much more empowering, is to make her likable. In that this is the thing that men, once they get in and they start being with her and they realize, oh, she's like this all the time. She's talking about TV ratings while we're having sex. That's funny and crazy.
So, and but I also...
There's nothing, there's nothing attractive about her as a character. Say Dunaway's a beautiful woman.
No, I know, but she as a character, she should be attractive, and she should have some redeeming qualities.
Yes, and that...
And I don't think that's her fault. I think that's the writing's fault.
I think it's writing, and I also think it's the direction.
Yeah. The flip side is also that they talk about that she was incredibly uncomfortable with playing to that level of coldness.
Because see,
I think that may be part of it. There's this tension in her of she doesn't want to be just this pure, cold-hearted robot. That's exactly how they said you have to play it this way, or it's not going to read.
We should have seen a portion of her being polite and using her femininity to get what she wants. But then when they start treating her like just a little pretty girl, she snaps and turns into that, no, I am a strong, fierce woman, and I'm going to get what I want, whether you like it or not.
Well, you can be sociopathic and still be, because she should be a sociopath as a character.
And here's the other thing, she's the smartest person in the room.
Yeah.
She's not played that way. She's just played as a cold bitch.
Exactly.
And that's what I don't like.
Yeah, it's... The problem is that, again, it's aged poorly, but you have to make her three-dimensional.
No, I understand that.
I'm looking
who is she against?
Let me go back to it. The big names we have, I mean, Liv Ullmann was up for Face to Face. She's a famous Swedish actress who is with Bergman. So I don't know anything about it. But the two big names were Talia Shire as Adrian from Rocky.
Okay.
And Sissy Spacek and Carrie.
Ooh.
Now Sissy would win later, and yeah, I think this was a classic case of they don't usually give it to the teenager who just broke big. That was more of a, wow, you did an amazing job. We're giving you a nomination.
It always seems like the women's Oscar is a makeup Oscar.
That's a problem of the industry.
With the women, it's, we're going to give you an award for your career, not this role.
Well,
like, that's what's finally going to happen with Amy Adams.
I know. Faye Dunaway had gotten plenty of notoriety in other things. She'd done Bonnie and Clyde, Chinatown, and then she was in a bunch of big things like Towering Inferno and things like that, but...
whatever.
She didn't have, like, super strong competition.
I don't disagree. So. I'm just like, whatever.
Okay. Next one is, and maybe my favorite in the movie, Robert Duvall as Frank Hackett.
Oh, he's great.
Here's what I love. We don't get to see Robert Duvall be sleazy and manic in very many things.
Correct.
He's very, very slimy, but he's also very all over the place.
He's very engaging.
Yeah, and it's different. I mean, normally now he's like elder statesman, or, he's sort of a Western quiet type lead character. And in this, he's totally playing the opposite of what we normally see him do, where he's just ranting and raving about the ratings and keeping the corporate happy, because he's all about the business.
Yeah.
He's a company man.
His character makes sense. He does a good job. He's engaging whenever he's on screen. He's one of the more interesting, him and William Holden are, whenever they're in a room together, they play off each other well too. They're good.
Yeah. Did
he get nominated?
No, he didn't.
Okay.
But I had like this secret, you might be the most interesting, he may not be the best performance in this movie, but he's one of the most interesting performances because it's so different for him.
Yeah.
Let me talk about the last Oscar real quick, and that is Beatrice Straight as Louise Schumacher.
Her scene is amazing.
And yeah, this is one of those, she had 5 minutes, 8 seconds of screen time in the movie.
This is the shortest screen time Oscar ever.
Yep. Even beat Judi Dench.
I know, because I was about to say, I think Judi Dench is for Shakespeare in Love was 8 minutes long.
Yeah, hers is five. She has 5 minutes and 8 seconds of screen time. Even the scene where she's telling him Howard is gone is quite good.
Yes.
But that's just the line.
That scene's beautiful.
The scene there's husband and a wife.
It's not vicious, but there's a lot of love, and there's also a lot of pain, mm-hmm. and also kind of like, there's also a lot of resolve. Like, I knew this was going to happen.
This is where the whole stage thing made so much sense to me. I was like, I could watch this on a stage, and I'd just be like floored. I'd be bawling in my seat if I was watching this live.
And I think it was very, they wrote her perfectly.
They did.
Because she knew this was coming.
Yep.
She's hurt, but she's not angry. She's not bitter about it. It's just kind of like, I think you got to move out.
Yeah.
It's going to be over. Okay. Like, it's a beautiful scene. And I completely understand why she was nominated, but you do not... I'm sorry. We need to add a caveat to screen time for winning an Oscar. Yeah. Because other people... I'm sorry. It's... No.
Well,
who else was she nominated against? So we have to play that game.
There was Jane Alexander from All the President's Men. I don't remember who that is, so I'd have to look it up.
Yeah, I haven't seen the movie, so I don't know.
Piper Laurie from Carrie as the mom.
Ooh, that woman's crazy.
And Jodie Foster, Taxi Driver.
Jodie Foster.
I know.
Also short screen time, but Jodie Foster wins.
She's screw you, Beatrice. So good in that movie. I agree. That's one of those few cases where I'm like, I don't care if you're 14, you deserve it.
Anna Paquin deserved it her year. Well, I can't say. She deserved that nomination.
1977 is a little different time with the kid stuff, so who knows?
Not Channing Tatum. Tatum O'Neal got nominated when she was like 10.
It's inherently political.
Did she win?
Who knows?
Did
Tatum O'Neal won, yeah.
Yeah.
She won for Paper Moon.
Yeah. I knew that's what she was nominated for.
So, you know, it is what it is. All right, last person I want to talk about who was nominated.
Mm-hmm.
Ned Beatty as Arthur Jensen. That scene is so fucking good. It's one of my favorite movie scenes of all time.
I'm looking at Ned Beatty. Oh, I like him.
He had done Deliverance before this, but he is an easy guy to mistake for M. Emmett Walsh.
He's the voice of Lotso in Toy Story 3.
Yep. Lotso Huggin' Bear.
Evil guy. Okay, I like it. He's good, and that scene's good. I can understand why they nominated him, and I could also see why someone else could have beat him.
There is no country. There is no politics. It's one of those classic cases where.
He was on Roseanne. It looks like he was playing Dan Connor's dad.
Regardless, I think his performance is one of those classic cases of. He got the writing, immediately got it, and went with it, and just went for it as far as he possibly could.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's interesting because I think it's very cynical in that he's literally doing what Howard Beale does on screen mm-hmm. to Howard Beale's face.
Yes.
Because he doesn't actually think those things, but mm-hmm. he knows it's going to get him what he wants.
Okay.
So, yeah. All right. I mean, I think that's it. It's acting and writing. You're right in that not a lot's happening in the movie. Not enough to be able to have a full discussion about.
Yeah.
It's one of these movies that if you saw it at the right time, yes. I think appropriately it would have just gone insane. But now, you know, they show this in film school because it.
Oh,
and I think it's a very great movie to show people to showcase how writing and acting can
that makes
really
sense.
Dovetail. But it's interesting that they show this movie and they ask kids, you know, do you see the satire? And people are like, there's no satire.
This all happened.
Yeah. People who aren't familiar with the past and the news, when they show this to sort of newer film school students, are like. I don't know. They're what satire. This is true.
Mm-hmm.
This is how it works. All right. So we get to the final moment. If you're going to give it stars.
Okay, but it's your movie, so you go first.
I know it's my movie. I'm going to give it 3.
Okay.
First of all, it's just like RoboCop for me. You still got to go see it. You okay. gotta go see it, and you gotta go see it for the moments that I think still give me chills. The I'm Mad as Hell still gives me chills, mm-hmm. even though it's kind of hokey. I still think it's awesome. It still gives me chills when he's up on the stage and then pass, and that's shot where he faints and the audience just starts applauding. And the scenes, the boardroom scene, all those things. When the dialogue's snappy and working and all comes together, and just how it's a roller coaster ride till it ends, mm-hmm. it's well worth the watch. It's just not nearly as good as I used to think it was. It doesn't.
Yay, I ruined another movie for you.
You didn't ruin it. It just doesn't hold up as well as it used to. Mm-hmm. It really doesn't. And it's finally aged out of that awe factor that it had. So.
Yeah.
So I still give it a 3, and still with that one qualifier of go watch it. If you've never seen it, go watch it, mm-hmm. And then decide for yourself.
Okay.
All right, you.
I'm going to give it a 2.5.
Okay.
I don't think it's a great movie. And, like, I understand, I agree with its merits.
Right.
I'm not going to watch this movie again. And I'm mostly just giving it that because there are some wonderful scenes and there is some wonderful acting.
Yeah.
So that's kind of why we're at a 2.5.
Well, that's fine. I mean, that was better than I was thinking we were going to go.
It's not RoboCop 1 bad. Or RoboCop 2015 2.
Neither of those worked very well.
2 was better. I mean, the new one was better.
Have we watched a legitimately bad movie yet?
RoboCop! I gave it a 1, and the only reason it got a 1 was because I liked the idea. The idea was good.
All right. Well, can we do better next time?
So next time we're going to do a special treat for y'all. We're going to do a Thanksgiving movie for you. We will be watching and reviewing Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, and we will be releasing that on Thanksgiving Day for you.
Because
you've never seen it.
I've never seen it.
It is John Candy and Steve Martin.
Two of my favorite comedic people. It's John Hughes.
It's John Hughes.
It is the one. I think it's the one John Hughes gap. Maybe St. Elmo's Fire, but I don't think anybody really counts that one.
You haven't seen.
But I've seen all the rest. I've seen Pretty in Pink. I've seen 16 Candles. I've seen Breakfast Club.
Have you seen Uncle Buck?
No.
Damn it. And my favorite Christmas movie is Home Alone.
Yeah.
It's not Christmas until I watch that.
And Ferris Bueller. Yeah. Still maybe my favorite movie. Mm-hmm. Not the best movie.
It's your favorite. It's your favorite movie.
It's my feel-good movie.
But you wouldn't let me name our son Cameron.
No. No.
Because you are Cameron.
I am Cameron. I could do the song right now because I have the voice.
Okay, so we're going to be doing that for Christmas, and then on the day at, not Christmas, Thanksgiving, the day after Thanksgiving, we're going to be doing a double feature for you. We're going to make David watch Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Uh-huh.
And then we're going to watch American Pie 2, because we watched the first one and David decided it wasn't horrible, so we're going to watch the second one. Because I think he'll like that one better. I think he'll enjoy that film a little bit more.
I might get it a little more.
Mm-hmm.
Do I get 2 in a row after this?
No.
Dang it!
Because then I'm watching The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Oh, that is 2 movies. That is 2. Because that's 3.5 hours.
Well, and then after that, we're going to do The Sound of Music.
Yeah, we're going big in the last months of the year.
Yeah, we're going to get all of that. So you can expect that over the next week and a half. We're going to have a lot of content coming out. But it's fun. We know that Thanksgiving, you guys are stuck in a car, in a plane, train.
Or automobile.
Uh-huh. And so we just wanted to give you guys a little extra content. Maybe you're stuck in an office all alone. We just wanted to give you guys something to listen to.
Yeah. So, before we get out of here, though,
mm-hmm.
we have to watch another movie.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see you guys in a minute.
Bye. So this weekend we saw Murder on the Orient Express.
2017.
Oh, yes, there was a previous one.
Uh-huh.
And based on... not good. not well received, I don't believe.
What? This?
The previous one.
No, the previous one is like a classic of cinema.
Is it?
Yes. Directed by your favorite director, by the way.
Who's my favorite director?
Sidney Lumet.
Really?
Oh, yeah. 1974. Albert Finney as Hercule Poirot, Lauren Bacall, Ingrid Bergman, Sean Connery, Martin Balsam, Jacqueline Bisset, John Gielgud, Anthony Perkins, Vanessa Redgrave.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This was.
Damn.
This is like a modern classic.
All right, well, I never saw it, so.
We should watch it.
I don't wanna.
We're not gonna talk about it.
Okay. So, this one is a great popcorn movie. It is entertaining. It moves along. It's a whodunit. And Kenneth Branagh is amazing. He plays a cute little...
Can I say one thing negative about it?
No.
And I'm going to tie this back. It's a popcorn movie. Mm-hmm. Which means that when you're done with it, and you've sat with it...
It's done.
You're not going to think anything of it afterwards.
You go to the movie and you're entertained by what you're seeing and you're enjoying yourself and then you leave and you're like, all right.
Yeah.
We're good.
So
and there's nothing wrong with that.
No. It's kind of interesting how kind of Oscar baity this movie has gotten.
Only in how it's being promoted.
Yes.
It's got an all-star cast. It's being directed by Kenneth Branagh, who did an amazing job and he stars in it. And that mustache is going to get an Oscar nomination for sure.
That's very true.
It's a beautiful movie. So that'll probably get a little bit of buzz. But there's not a single performance that I would say is award worthy. I could see Kenneth Branagh being nominated if they want some filler in a Golden Globe category. But... You know, we're just now starting the Oscar bait movies, so he'll get knocked down easily.
Well, and Michelle Pfeiffer got some buzz, but really more for Mother,
mm-hmm.
which I know has been very, very poorly received critically.
It's been panned.
But I believe her performance has been mm-hmm. widely, like, said, like, wow, she's amazing in this movie. She's, like, the one bright spot. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a different discussion. And then this movie, she's good. Nobody stands out as being, like, great.
I loved, Kenneth Branagh does.
Yes.
And the way his character is written, I don't know a lot about, the character. This is Agatha Christie's main dude. This is, you know, who was the protagonist of all of her books.
Mm-hmm. Most of her books.
He was the big one. So I remember the pastry thing, you know, Hercule Poirot has a proclivity for pastries. But some of the, like, he's kind of OCD. He doesn't like imbalance. I don't know if that's a thing throughout, but it's played for laughs in this film and it lands very well. Just the way he cuts people in conversation is just hilarious.
Yeah. I don't know what else to say with it. I mean, do you want to do quick hits on the rest of the cast as they show
sure.
up here?
Sure. Because there are a lot of named people.
Oh my gosh.
A lot of great people.
The main 12 are all...
The main 12. Is this Lord of the Rings?
There's like two or three that are kind of unknown, but but most are pretty big names.
Mm-hmm.
Penelope Cruz as Pilar Estravados.
Her role's relatively small.
The nurse.
Okay.
It's very interesting. They've downplayed her in a lot of ways, though.
But she has a small role.
Well,
hers is relatively small.
Okay, whatever. Willem Dafoe as Gerhard Hardman.
I didn't realize he was in this film, so when he showed up on the screen, I was happy. I was like, oh, hi, it's you.
I want to be on the A squad.
But Hans, you're the leader of the B squad.
That's... No. Bill Murray doesn't have an accent in that movie.
Oh, whatever.
Judi Dench is Princess Dragomirov.
She was very weak. I hated her accent.
Oh, okay.
It was distracting.
Well, all right.
To me.
You've made your point.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm scrolling. Daisy Ridley as Miss Mary Debenham.
Oh, you didn't realize who that was in the film.
Okay, let's be very clear.
You should
Every single thing she's been in, she's been Rey.
I don't believe that that's
no,
true.
No, I know, but like...
Daisy Ridley, famous for Star Wars, Force Awakens, she's Rey, she's our new Jedi princess lady, she's awesome, and...
She's got very red hair in this movie, and I just didn't catch it. I just thought it was a generic British actress.
That's rude and wrong. And she just... She
I'm
just
sorry, all British people look alike to me.
Whatever. You turn to me. You tell me like a couple hours. Like, is it bad that I didn't realize that was Daisy Ridley? And I'm like, yes, that's horrible, David.
Hey, you want to slap me on the next one?
Yes.
I didn't realize this was Leslie Odom Jr. Is Dr. Arteeth not?
I just threw my koosh ball at David. For those of you who've been living under a rock, Leslie Odom Jr. played Mr. Aaron Burr in the smash musical Hamilton. He originated the role, and he won a Tony for it.
Okay, calm down. Just a little.
Yeah, it's fine. He was also on that movie Smash.
Actually,
movie,
okay, so here's why. Number one, I haven't seen much of him visually, and number two, he's playing a British person. I thought he was a British person because his accent is very good.
He did very good. So, and I do kind of like, because I don't, again, I don't remember the first one, that they wrote his race into the movie.
Yes.
Which I really liked, because it allowed for them to have a more diverse cast. I mean, it's still a lot of white people. But, yeah, it's, I like it. They worked it in well, because it's a, it is a period piece.
Yeah. Josh Gad is Hector McQueen.
I love Josh Gad.
He's good.
He's good. He does not look good with that mustache. It's creepy.
But he just gets to straight act in this movie. It's really nice. It's refreshing for him.
He's another Tony winner for Book of Mormon.
Yeah.
Oh, he's also the voice of Olaf.
Johnny Depp as Edward Ratchet.
It was really nice to see him look sober and like himself.
He didn't really look sober.
He looked like a Johnny Depp sober, meaning one glass of wine a day instead of 12.
Well, and apparently there's not great stories coming from the red carpet that it went off the rails for him even more. So,
no. He has been praised by Tom and Lorenzo for not looking like he's trying to be, you know, Steven Tyler.
He was also told by almost every magazine that he looked incredibly drunk, and then he gave interviews where he sounded incredibly incoherent.
That's consistent with him as a person?
He's got problems, man.
He's broke.
It's bad.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's still amazing. Derek Jacobi as Edward Henry Masterman.
The valet.
Yes.
He was good.
Edward Jacobi's so wonderfully understated.
Actor.
He's fantastic in the things he's in.
Mm-hmm.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Pfeiffer.
That's how I used to always say her name. Because there's
Pfeiffer.
There's a P and an F. Like, come on.
Pfeiffer.
Anyway.
She's fine.
Caroline Hubbard. She's trying to make a little comeback here.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. Olivia Colman as Hildegard Schmidt.
She's the made for the Judi Dench character.
The attendant. She's in so many British television shows, like big name British TV shows.
Yeah, she's a character. She's a British character actress.
Yes. And she's perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't have any lines because she's very quiet, so. And
she plays her part.
And that's about it. Now, I also enjoy this little tidbit that the picture of Poirot's love is a very young Emma Watson. Or not Emma Watson, Emma Thompson.
Emma Thompson, who was Kenneth Branagh's first wife.
Yes.
It's kind of creepy in a way.
Creepy or, here's the thing, if she agreed to it, which I could totally see her doing.
She would have had to.
And also, they're probably fine.
Okay, here's the thing. I don't know what the terms in which they got divorced were.
Yeah.
And I have not heard either of them speak about the other in the press ever. Because I did not know they were married until I read that piece of trivia on IMDb. So I could very well see them being like, we're best friends. We just don't need to be married to each other. Then it's fine.
I'm sure it's that. And then I would posit then they... This was a a huge way for him to tap into the character. And so he's like, would you mind if I did this so I can draw on it? That strikes me as a big thing for him.
Maybe. But he, I mean, I think he does a wonderful job.
He's the highlight of the movie.
Oh, I mean, he is.
He's the reason to go see it. Everybody else is just serving the whole plot.
He does a very good job directing. Directing himself. And usually, there are many times where, you know, when an actor does both at the same time, it doesn't always go for very well.
The only other person that I think has pulled it off pretty well is Clint Eastwood. The movies he's in that he's directed,
Clint Eastwood only plays him one character.
You are not correct.
I think I am.
I don't think you are at all.
Okay.
So, we'll have to. I mean, we're gonna be watching Good, the Bad, and the Ugly soon. So.
I know.
He didn't direct that though.
No. I'm looking. We'll see, and it's because of that fact that I'm really interested in a Disaster Artist, because James Franco's directing that, and he's the lead, and that'll be interesting.
Yeah, though he's already done some of that. It's just been very smaller projects.
He's also directing his brother and his sister-in-law.
He's directed his brother quite a bit, too.
Yes. That's only helped his brother.
He and his brother... I mean, that's just James Franco experimenting with crap.
Yeah, they're just playing.
That's what he does all the time.
Well, that movie has all their friends. We're so excited about The Disaster Artist.
That's a movie he was, like, bored to make, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
All of those guys.
This is a... If you just want to be entertained, you don't want to have feelings, you don't really want to think, go see this one.
Yeah, for sure.
How would you rate it?
Give it a 3.
I'd give it a 3.5.
Yeah.
The mustache is amazing.
You're giving it a half point just for the mustache.
Yeah. I would watch this movie again. If it came on TV, I wouldn't necessarily change the channel.
I'm not buying it, absolutely.
Oh, no.
Not.
No, I won't. Well.
No. No, I'm not paying.
$3?
No, I'm not buying. It needs to be streaming for free for me to watch it again.
Okay. Well, I might do that when it settles in on HBO, I'm sure.
Of course.
All right, guys.
That's it for this episode. Please take a moment to review and rate us on iTunes, and for questions and comments, drop us an email at macintosh@gmail.com.